Commissioner, I want to start with what's in the headlines. We just had a weekend with two mass shootings, one in Dayton, Ohio, one in El Paso, Texas, 29 people killed. Florida has had these tragedies. We had Parkland. We had Pulse. What was your reaction when you saw the news this weekend?
Anger. I was heartbroken and angry that this is continuing to happen. I mean, I was used to live in Broward County, and you know, those kids that experience what happened in Parkland is just heartbreaking. And then I'm actually been here in Orlando over the weekend and was at the Pulse Memorial a few weeks ago, and the fact that we are still having tragedies like this all across the country makes you kind of stop and think what's going on. There must be a disconnect between society and what's happening. I don't know if it's heated up because of things that are going on at a national level, all of the fear that's being put out there and hatred, or it's, just like simple, the fact that we have lost touch with interaction with people. You know, everybody's so glued and tied to their cell phones and to video games and to the internet. I think we've lost our moral compass in the country, and we need to start doing some deep dives in our souls and see what's going on and start having some action. We have the prayers and tears is long since gone. And of course, we feel heartbreak for everybody that's lost this weekend. But it just reminds us that we have to start moving forward and take action and figure out what's going on, because we can't live like this.
And when you talk about taking action, I mean, look, there's so many different angles of this, the mental health issue, and we talk about hate speech and so forth. But of course, one thing will be guns. What do you envision the conversation about assault weapons and guns in general will be in the next session?
Yeah, I think that we all have to take a step back. And unfortunately, what I've seen a lot on these gun debates is everybody has drawn their lines in the sand and have gone to their two corners. And that doesn't get good pieces of legislation in place. Everybody needs to come down and sit together and not want knee-jerk reactions in the legislature to piecemeal something, but sit down and have these conversations. And maybe it's not the politicians. You know, it's the people that are being affected by this. It's law enforcement. It's the parents. It's the kids that are going to school every day in fear. And having these actual conversations of what is happening, what do we need to be doing? Because what the politicians, we haven't gotten it right. We haven't gotten it right since Columbine. And we continue to say, we all talk about, some type of, actions right after mass killings, and then everybody gets quiet again. But unfortunately, these mass killings are happening once a week. I mean, this is something that we need to take a step back, sit down like adults, and come up with some resolutions to all of this, whether it's mental health, whether, it's, certain, sensible legislation. I don't have the answers, but I know that us doing nothing is not the answer. And we've got to sit down at a table and figure this out.
You yourself, you're a gun owner.
I am.
And so, I mean, what would policy look like? Sensible gun control, because as you said, people have gone off into their corners. How do you bring them back into a table to sit down and talk and find something that works for everybody?
We have no choice. This is no longer a choice conversation when it's convenient for all of us to have these talks. How many mothers have to die protecting their two-month-old babies? How many kids have to go to school and at the end of the day not come home? I mean, this is not something that we can sit back and wait. We've got to come together. This is literally life and death in our country. And if we don't take action and we don't step up and don't start leading, the next mass murderers are down the street, are, in the next coming weeks. I mean, we've got to be serious and start taking action on this. And when I say action, I said, we really need to sit down and have a conversation, both sides of the aisle and both sides of this conversation, have Moms Demand Action in a room with the NRA, come up with something. And that's the only way that we're going to move forward and start to heal, is because we've got to do this together. This has been dividing our country since the beginning, and we no longer have, time is not on our side. I can't watch another headline where I'm seeing these horrific pictures and stories that are coming out that just break your heart. And, the law enforcement officers who run into danger every single day, we have to take action and be proactive on this, because we don't have a choice. This is no longer something that we can wait for another mass murder to come along.
And there is a proposal on for the 2020 November ballot in Florida that would put an outright ban on assault weapons. What's your thought on that?
I have not engaged on that issue. This is something that the citizens of our state If it's on the ballot, that's where they have part to say. But that's also because, the politicians haven't done anything on this issue. And that's, what I've also been very vocal on is the fact of Citizens Initiative. That's when I saw, when I started campaigning, talking about the 71% of our Floridians who voted for access to medical marijuana and how the legislature and the previous governor stood in the way of real implementation of this medicine. So I've always been a proponent of, citizens having their day at the ballot box, whether it's for their elected officials or for citizens' initiatives, because that's the only way that we've been able to move our state forward. The fact that the past legislature, tried to make it harder for these initiatives to be on the ballots really goes to the core of some of the issues that we fight every single day.
But the thing that you do have, a say in is obviously, as the agriculture commissioner, is the gun permits. And right now, the system that we have in Florida, can people be confident that certain individuals can't get those permits, especially for assault weapons or through loopholes?
I made a promise to the citizens of our state when I ran that the NRA would no longer be part of my administration and that every single person who applies for a concealed weapons permit is going to have a thorough and complete background check. And I can tell you with complete confidence that is exactly what we are doing. The citizens of our state expect that from their leaders to make sure that, what is in my power and control is making sure our citizens are safe and protected and that the background checks are done. And that's what we've done. We came in and completely revamped the entire program, put new leadership at the top of the division. And now all of our background checks are done and thorough. And we've been more efficient in it too. We've been able to drop the wait times and be more efficient. We have 20 new full-time positions. And even when we first came in, we had people working overtime just to catch up on the backlog. But I can guarantee you, and the promise that I made to the citizens when I declared for office is a promise that I live with every single day, and I will not fail.
I'm talking with Florida Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried. We're talking about the two mass shootings that occurred over the weekend and the impact that they could have on gun control policy in Florida. But I want to switch gears now. Let's go and talk about a very different subject, one that also is controversial, hemp. So help me understand, Commissioner, the new farm bill that went into effect July 1st, did it effectively legalize the sale and growth of hemp nationally?
What it did was it allowed it took hemp off of the Schedule One, which is where it was with the rest of the cannabis plant, and allowed each state to create their own hemp program, and that's for the cultivation aspects of it and anything that comes after the hemp plant. So many of our states across the country, in this last past legislative session, in fact, passed hemp rules and hemp laws. And the USDA is also working too, because what happens is if a state does not do their own, they then opt into the federal one. So the USDA is also working on theirs, and hopefully, by the end of the year, once we get our rules in place, we'll get seeds in the ground in 2019.
To set the context here, remind us of the difference between hemp and marijuana that someone might smoke or eat.
Marijuana has THC in it, which is going to have the euphoric aspect, which is what we have here in our state, the medical marijuana program, where I think everybody is well aware that we have 22 licenses across the entire state. Everything is vertically integrated, whereas hemp is non-euphoric. It can be used either for industrial side, which is really what makes me the most excited about the program, because there's 25 to 35,000 known usages for the hemp plant. And that's everything from being able to replace our styrofoams and our plastics and our paper and cotton and even create hempcrete, which is better building material and fibers. So this is really something that's going to be the industrial revolution, and it's all biodegradable, better for the environment. So I'm super excited about the industrial side. And then the other part of the plant can be used for human and animal consumption. That's where you hear about the CBD, hemp CBD oils and products out there that have been unregulated and unchecked across the entire country. We have the ability here in Florida, once our rules are in place, to be able to create rules and regulations and testing standards and labeling requirements so that when somebody buys a product in the state of Florida, they know that it's safe for human consumption. They know exactly what's in there. We are seeing all across the state when somebody has bought some type of hemp, CBD product. Sometimes it has THC in it. Sometimes it has no CBD in it or other chemicals. So it's really important for people to understand that CBD is not going to get you high, but it's actually a great health and wellness product. I'm hearing plants.
So, but how do you tell the difference between the two?
Well, you know, and it's raw formula. As far as just the flour itself, you can't. It's unless you have it tested. You can't. The smell is the same. It looks the same. And just by, you know, the common eye, you're not going to be able to tell the
So
difference.
this leads to the controversy about how police officers go about arresting somebody. Let's look at a scenario. Imagine an officer pulls somebody over. They think they see pot. All right. So, I mean, do we have to train officers now in knowing the difference between the federally illegal marijuana and the fully legal hemp?
By eye, an officer, and even the canine dogs are not going to be able to tell the difference. So what I've seen a lot of the state attorneys do across the entire state is put out, you need to have odor plus, which means you just can't, you know the difference if you see the cannabis in the car, whether that's going to be marijuana or hemp. But so an officer needs to do, and if they're actually going to arrest, they have to find something else. Has there been irregularities in the behavior, driving patterns, other types of things, impairment that is going to be allowed to do an arrest? And then we're working on, we've had a few companies come to us already and show demonstrations of the on the field tests that are going to be out there. And so then kind of like if the officer was on the spot test, if there was cocaine and it goes into a bottle and you can be able to tell immediately. They're
So
working on those tests and we're going to be able to get those over to law enforcement.
in Martin County, the sheriff told his officers don't make marijuana arrests because it's hard to tell the difference. What are you hearing from law enforcement?
I'm hearing a lot of the same thing. I was actually at the Sheriff's Association last week, and we're hearing a lot of that and hearing how do we tell the difference and asking just questions. And a lot of it is not understanding what is happening. And so we are spending a lot of time. We have an entire ag law division inside of Department of Agriculture. Our ag law is working hand in hand with FDLE and sheriffs and police chiefs all across the state. We want to make sure that they have a seat at the table. And if there's things that we can do when we're doing our rules that are going to be easier to make sure they're doing their job, we're going to make sure that we're working with them. So we are hearing just kind of questions as far as what to do in those circumstances, and we're going to be working with them to make sure that they understand what the law is today. Because the last thing we want to do is put one, law enforcement in any harm's way when they're just trying to do their job, and two, that they can still do their job. And that means obviously arrest of those who are illegally in possession of marijuana.
So the state of Florida is still trying to work out how to handle medical marijuana, which the voters passed. But there's a petition to get recreational marijuana on the November ballot. The language is now being reviewed by the Florida Supreme Court. If it gets to that point, is Florida ready for that?
You know, it's kind of funny, you know, how if we had this conversation 5 years ago, I say absolutely not. You know, people still have a stigma associated with it. There is still just uncertainty. But I think that now everybody's hearing the stories of how medical marijuana is helping people. It is helping people get off of their opiates, getting, you know, a better quality of life, is more safe and than all the other pharmaceutical drugs that are out there. And so you're changing the climate and acceptance of the marijuana plant itself. And then you start having the more intellectual conversations. Well, this has an opportunity to create revenue, taxable, you know, resources to go into education, to infrastructure, job growth, and then starts to decrease the as far as the criminal justice and start having, you know, less people in our jail system and bogging down our courts. And so you're now having less and decrease in the amount of infrastructure needed in the criminal justice system. So people are kind of saying, okay, well, maybe this isn't so bad. So I think that, you know, we're getting there, whether it's on the 2020 ballot or 2020. It's just a matter of time. And we're even seeing a difference in opinions and just acceptance when it comes to the federal level. I mean, look at some of the pieces of federal legislation that's starting to actually move in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. So we're seeing banking reforms coming through. We're starting to see states' rights issues. So you're starting to see even movement on the federal level, which I think is a clear indication that the country is ready to put this prohibition behind it and start kind of moving forward and having law enforcement focusing on issues like trafficking, like all of the other crimes that are going on in the country, and stop focusing on cannabis arrests.
And the other thing too is this, because you talk about what hemp could be for the economy. Marijuana could be the same thing. I mean, do you look to other states, you look to Colorado and say, all right, maybe this could work here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see the numbers in Colorado. I believe last year, I think they brought in like $300 to $500 million in revenue that goes to their state budget. And unfortunately, I don't want to be a downer, but we have had a tremendous economic boost in the last 10 years. It is just a matter of time that we're going to start hitting a recession. And when our state in particular is so reliant on tourism, unfortunately, that's the first disposable income that goes away to people. And so we've got to make sure that we have the revenue sources here to make sure that we've got industries that people can go in and get employment in, that we still have job growth, that we still have an opportunity to have an expanded economy. And I've always said that cannabis is the future of our state, because I do believe that the cannabis plant, and one, you see already the medical marijuana program's already hit $1 billion. Not taxable right now because it's still a medicine, but $1 billion. And then the hemp plant, I'm estimating to be $20 to $30 billion of really an industry that's great for agriculture, great for the environment, for small business owners, for minority business owners, and job growth that just would exceed anything that we would see from any other type of industry that we would bring here. So there is tremendous opportunity for this cannabis plant and for the hemp plant in particular for here in our state.
You are the solely elected Democrat to a statewide position. There was an editorial in the Sun Sentinel this past weekend discussing the significance of your role as the only progressive in the DeSantis cabinet. How do you see your role when you look forward on issues like gun control, on pot, and many other issues?
It's not easy because we all, and if you ask any member of the cabinet, we put state first, and state before party. And of course, some of these issues, it's not partisan necessarily, but we're going to see differences of opinion. And it's my obligation to also be a check. Our democracy, the foundation of our democracy, is built on a two-party system, three branches of government, really four branches of government. You are one of them as a free press. And it's important to have those checks and balances and competing voices. Going back to even what we were talking about earlier in the gun debate, having those competing voices is what gets us to compromise. It's what gets us to a better government. And when we're doing that together and coming to the middle and coming to compromise and coming to, adult conversations that are difficult, but coming in with our big girl and big boy pants on to try to figure out what's best for our state. The only way to do that is there happens to be competing voices at the table. And that's the only way that we can move our state forward is when we start having those conversations that are hard, those are difficult. But we are the proxy for our citizens, and we have a moral and ethical obligation to fulfill those needs of our state. And we've got to do that by having a checks and balance system in our state.